And welcome to the Fanboy Garage. I'm Chris Lasanti, and I'm very happy to welcome back to the show, after a one-week absence, my co-host, Aaron Varola.
Hey, what's going on, guys? So good to be back. It's been a crazy week. I know Chris shared with all of you guys the passing of my father last week. This week is all about kind of getting back to normal, but thank you guys for those of you who have reached out and sent your condolences. It really means a lot, but we'll start talking about all the things that have been swirling around the Twitterverse regarding Batman and some of our other Marvel superheroes. Like, is Captain Marvel going to be the first MCU dud?
Oh, man.
So, Chris.
Yeah, well, I mean,
let's get into it.
It's funny, we did... Two episodes ago, we did our show with Rick Hsu, Batman on Film, talking all about the Batman and Matt Reeves, right? And we even mentioned Armie Hammer, right, as a possibility for the role, and we kind of dissected him and whether we thought it was a good idea or not. And now, of course, this week, Mario Francisco Robles, the editor-in-chief of Revenge of the Fans, broke the story that Armie Hammer is in the final stages of negotiating to become the next Bruce Wayne / Batman. And, you know, even though some of the trades have come out and tried to debunk that and shoot it down, you know, we don't know, right? We'll see. Time will tell whether that or not this is true or not. But clearly, that's all anybody's talking about right now is Batman. Yeah.
So, this kind of exploded into, you know, the topic of conversation for most of the folks in our circle, right? So, you know, I trust in, you know, what Mario has revealed to all of us. I know he's got some sources that have not led him astray. I mean, there's been quite a lot of things in his dealings with his sources that have come to fruition. So, you know, I think it's an interesting time to watch all of this stuff now, because, you know, in years past, there have been many folks who have been sort of eared for a particular role and then they've denied it, right? Flat out denied it. And, you know, time has gone by and then they ultimately were the character, you know, they end up taking the role. So, you know, Armie Hammer as Batman, I mean, it sounds like, at least from the conversations that I was reading, more people are going to be disappointed if he doesn't get it than the fact that, or that he's not doing it, than the fact that that it may not have been true at all. So, I don't know, man. I kind of want people to pump their brakes a little bit and just kind of take it in. Because people are just eating each other alive over a rumor. It's a rumor, you know. It's ultimately a rumor until, you know, it's official.
Right. I mean, look, this is, and when we even mentioned this with Rick, right, the history of these casting announcements, people are going to be eating each other alive regardless. If this was an official announcement, people would be eating each other alive. The fact that it's not an official announcement, it's a real, people are eating each other alive. It was destined to happen anyway, but a lot of times what happens is you start getting into semantics, right? So this person says, this is happening, it's in the final stages. The other person turns around and says, nope, my people are telling me no. And a lot of that is just like, I mean, you see this a lot in sports too. Like right now, like baseball free agency is going on. And like you'll see like reporters, one guy will say, oh, this is close. And another guy will say, no, my people tell me no. And it's just like, a lot of times it's semantics. Sometimes people may be saying, no, this is not a done deal. But then the person wasn't actually saying it was a done deal, you know? And there's a lot of times you have to really read between the lines on a lot of this stuff to see, you know, what is the agenda, right, that everybody has? Where are they coming at it? Because it really isn't that serious. And we, of course, because Twitter is Twitter, and, I mean, everything gets turned into a gigantic, you know, we're making mountains out of molehills all the time with this stuff. And you knew with Batman this was going to be a thing. I mean, it's always a thing.
Oh, my God. It's like, it's crazy how, you know, everyone is flipping out over this. It's like, we do know that this is a fictional character, right? Like,
Well, and
I
we
know
don't
how
learn
important
our.
Batman is to people, but it's like,
Yeah.
whoa.
And nobody learns their lesson, right? Because at the
No,
end of the
man, it's so
day,
bad.
let's wait and see the movie. Whoever it is,
Yeah.
whoever's cast, whoever's, we're not going to know whether they're good, bad, or otherwise until we actually see the movie. And I just don't. I mean, I know why it happens, but I just don't understand why we don't learn from our mistakes over and over again. I mean, this is one of these things where, like, so I said last week on the show, like, it's going to be great to get back to talking about fun things, right? Even though they're less significant
Yeah.
than some of the other things going on in our lives. That's what this is supposed to be, man. This is Batman we're talking about. I
Yeah,
mean,
like
come
let's get
on.
excited the fact that he's going to be in the theaters in like less than 2 years. Well, in like in 2 years, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, pump the brakes, hold your horses, and every other freaking phrase to just slow down. I mean, and the other thing is too, I think people may not have insight into the world of like PR and negotiation and all that, but you know, a lot of that stuff too, you know, could be leaked to get, you know, Armie Hammer more on the fence. Maybe he's on the fence. Maybe it's to get him, you know, sort of more involved in wanting to take the role and all of that. You know what I'm saying? Like, there's a
Yeah.
whole lot of like motivation that happens behind the scenes that people may not. He might be denying it because they're not giving him enough money.
Especially when you're dealing with the trades, right?
Right.
I mean, that's who's feeding a lot of that stuff.
Right.
You
Right.
know, so yeah, I mean, but you know, I mean, I've said this a lot on the show. I am one of these people now that I'm like, talk to me when something's official. And then
Yeah.
I may or may not get excited about it at that point. I feel like we have been hearing so much about this movie that hasn't even started to be made yet that
Yeah.
I'm almost tired of it already. Like,
Yeah.
I'm almost like by the time this movie actually hits theaters, like, I'm going to be exhausted. And Batman is my favorite character of all time. And it's just like, man, like, what a whirlwind. I mean, we've all, you know, I mean, look, Aquaman just came out and is setting the world on fire, and people are
Still,
still just talking about Batman
yeah,
and the casting.
it's a shame. It really is a shame. But it also, but it's also, it should also be considered a bright spot because nobody gets crazy about the Hulk like this.
No,
You know,
they sure they
no
don't.
one gets crazy about. I mean, I think, you know, eventually when Disney slash Marvel are thinking about recasting, you know, characters of like Iron Man and Captain America, because they've been sort of pushed to such prominence in the past, you know, 11, 12 years, I think there will be a lot of buzz about it, but I don't think to this extent by any
No,
means.
and I think at this point, Batman, it's almost become kind of like a James Bond type thing, you know, where it's like who's playing the role is a becomes a very big deal,
Yeah.
because it's become that type of character now, because it's such an iconic character and it's so ingrained in our culture that the person playing this role, it is a very, very big deal. I mean, you know, Superman to an extent, because I think of the Cavill stuff. Like, if they ever were to recast Superman, it would be a big deal because so many people didn't want the role to be recast. But,
Right.
you know, when it comes to Batman, it's a very, and it also, I think too, I think who the character, who they wind up casting will, I think, give us a little bit of an idea of the tone and where they're
Right.
trying to go with this movie. So I think, you know, people always want to know, like, as much as people say, I don't want to be spoiled or I don't want this, we still have that in us, right? Where we want to know as much as we can about a movie before it comes out. So I think that plays a role in it too.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, you know, it's just I feel like we're back in like 2007, 2006 ish when they cast it's probably 2007 when they cast Heath Ledger as a Joker.
Yeah.
And at this point they haven't even cast anybody
I
yet,
mean,
so we don't even
exactly.
know. It could be
That's why it's a little different.
yeah, well, yeah, and social media is just on a whole other
Yeah.
level now, but you know, it's just it's interesting to see and hear all that because even you know outside of the Armie Hammer stuff there were a whole bunch of other names like Robert Pattinson getting Pattinson
Pattinson.
getting thrown into the mix and some of these other folks and you know Kit Harington and you can like you know, to your point about the tone of the film, you can start to shape based on who they're looking at as, you know, for the character, what kind of Batman they're kind of they're trying to go for. But you don't really know until you see the film, right? Like,
no,
stylistically,
or at least some footage from the film,
right?
You know, a trailer.
But stylistically, you might have a good understanding of like what, you know, Matt Reeves' sensibilities when it comes to his filmmaking. But, you know, casting aside, like, it could be completely different. You know what I mean? Like, what you might assume Robert Pattinson or Kit Harington or even Armie Hammer to do, or to, like, in how they're going to act as Batman, could be completely different. It might blow your mind. They might do something completely different. So let's take a deep breath. I'm sure all will be revealed at some point, because they're going to have to announce something. But yeah, I'm with you, Chris. I think I'm getting sick and tired of all of this Batman hubbub for nothing.
Yeah, because so much of it is just antagonistic too. And it's now it's not just with like fans on Twitter. Now, I mean, you're starting to see like scoopers and trade people and blogger, like they're going at each other now. And that's, you know, fans the flames, and it's just that's when I start to tune out, because I'm just like, you know what? I don't, like, again, we're talking about Batman. Like, geez, like, come on. I'm not going to come on Twitter and I like a good conversation and a good discussion on film or movies or TV or wrestling or whatever the case may be. But, you know, I'm not going to sit here and get into, like, you know, flame wars over Batman. That's just not, it's not going to happen. Yeah, I mean, I don't want to get into that stuff to begin with, but especially over something like that, that I'd rather just put on an episode of Batman the Animated Series and enjoy myself than to go on Twitter and argue with people over who may or may not be playing Batman in a movie that we had known nothing about.
I know. You sound like comment on Twitter.
Yes.
About the little micro penis joke.
I did. It was subtle. You are very, guys, you are the king of, you're not the continuity king, you are the king of subtlety.
Oh yeah, totally.
Yeah. You're as subtle as a punch in the face.
I don't know. I saw all of this stuff going on back and forth, and, you know, scoopers trying to debunk other scoop. I was like, oh my God, everyone wants their like little, you want their little like floor of sunlight. It's like my cat. He looks for that little speck of light on the floor, and so he can like cook himself in there. I don't know, man.
Well,
I'm at a loss, because it actually brings out the worst in fandom to some degree. Because then what ends up happening is, and we're seeing it, you know, with our own community of people and the revenge of the fans, like everyone kind of camps up, right? You got everyone in this camp over here saying, no, this, it's this and that. And then this other camp over here saying, no, it's that and this. It's like, guys, chill. Please chill. We all love the character. I'm sure a lot of people are hoping that it is Armie Hammer. Let's just wait. But shots are being fired left and right. And I just avoided most of it outside of my little micro penis comment. But
I like how you keep saying your little micro. It's cute. So speaking of movies, though, that are actually coming out, Captain Marvel, we're less than a month away now from the release of this movie. And now, again, kind of tying into this, forget all the stuff that's going on right now about the people that are already sabotaging the audience scores, which I don't even know why that's allowed. Why is that a thing? Why are audience scores open right now for movies that haven't been released? Just can't you just, it doesn't make sense. Like, just shut that thing down.
Not only that, but the film hasn't even been screened.
I know,
yet.
That's what I mean. So just shut, that should be shut down. But that's a whole different conversation. I mean, if anybody at this point hasn't figured out why these audience scores have no value, then I don't really know what to tell you. But anyway, I'm finding myself, and I've said this, I've been fairly consistent about this especially since the last trailer came out, but I am finding it really hard getting excited for this movie. This is the least hyped I've been for a Marvel film in a very long time, and maybe ever, because Like, even Ant-Man, I was more excited for, in some ways, based on the trailers and stuff, than I am for this movie. This thing is just not moving the needle for me at all. Yeah. And I really don't know why. I mean, I know that the last trailer, certain things kind of rubbed me the wrong way with dialogue and whatnot, but I don't know. Maybe it's because it's coming. I mean, but I could have said the same thing last year with Black Panther coming before Infinity War, but maybe it's because it's coming before Endgame. I just don't know, man. I am not pumped up for this. And I think we've spent so much time talking about DC properties that, I think now, we've talked a lot about the Marvel formula, the MCU formula, and how we're not big believers in that whole concept. But I almost feel like now DC, regardless of the quality of the films, in our opinion, it's almost more interesting to talk about right now because it is so much going on, so many changes, so many things that are new, so many things that are fresh. And Marvel is classic just
underdog story.
Yeah, and Marvel is just kind of going along at their pace and doing their thing. And a movie like this now, I'm finding it hard to get into because there's just no conversation being generated about it. Yeah. Like you look at it on Twitter right now, I mean, what are people in our community talking about? They're talking about Aquaman. They're talking about the Batman. They're talking about the Joker and Birds of Prey and Harley Quinn. And even I saw a lot of people talking about Doom Patrol, which I actually did watch the first episode this week and really liked it. On DC Universe. I think that show's got a ton of potential. It's quirky in all the right ways. But anyway, this is what people are talking about. And I don't see anybody talking about Captain Marvel until now that I see people talking about how, like, these audience score tanking things are going on. But that's, like, really the first time I've seen any real conversation being generated about the movie. And it's not the best way to get conversation generated.
I've been lightly following stuff around Captain Marvel. It's not necessarily the best stuff. For example, Brie Larson, some guy pulled together like tickets to send, school kids to go see Black Panther. And like he ran out, it was like a big deal. And he's like struggling to get people to go see Captain Marvel. Like the level of engagement is like drastically reduced for Captain Marvel. So there's that, and I heard that, and then I saw all the stuff about the audience scores, and it's kind of funny because I see the trailers, like the TV spots, and I'm like, yeah, all right, cool. I wonder if it's a Infinity War effect. Like, Infinity War left us on such a cliffhanger that anything – unless you stuck around for the stringer, which I'm sure most people did, but like we're all looking for a finality in that. I don't think we know that Captain Marvel isn't going to quench our thirst, so to speak, in terms of fulfilling that need, right? Of like figuring out how everyone comes back and all of that good stuff in Endgame. So maybe it's a bit of that.
It could be. I don't know. I mean, although having
I mean, the trailers weren't necessarily the best.
Yeah.
But, there isn't just like that feverish.
No.
It's an MCU film. I got to go see it. Now, for me, it's a little different because the first MCU film I did not see in the theaters was Ant-Man and the Wasp. And I don't remember. I think I just had a lot of stuff going on. I think I went on vacation or whatever. But I never got a chance to see it. And I checked it out. I bought it and I was like, yeah, that was a good movie. It was great. I kind of feel like if I could redo it all over again, I'd probably go see that movie. And maybe Captain Marvel might be the one that I'd be like, oh, yeah, I'll skip out on that one. But we're going to have, I guess we're having a Revengers watch party. So,
yeah, it's really hard to say. I think too, and ironically enough, Shazam, I think, is taking some of the hype away from this too, because there wasn't a DC movie last year or really anything coming out around the time of like Black Panther, right? Other than Infinity War, which was down the ways. But you know, Shazam's getting some hype right now, and I think that's stealing a little bit of the thunder from this movie too. And also the cultural impact thing, right? You know, Wonder Woman, we have Wonder Woman already, right? So this isn't the first, you know, female-led superhero film.
Right.
So you're going to have that cultural impact, I don't think is going to be felt either as much, like the way like Black Panther had that such a huge cultural impact. So I think there's a lot of things that are at play here. Now, again, having said all this, once the movie comes out, we don't know. I mean, it's still a Marvel film, so I think it only does have a certain floor. I think we're about to find out what the floor is for a Marvel film. But it is going to be the first superhero film released, right, since Aquaman. So you are going to get a little bit of that. People will get a kind of a head start. But, you know, knowing that Infinity War is Endgame, rather, is like a month away, a little bit more than a month away. And with Shazam kind of in between there, it's going to be interesting to see if people do decide to skip this movie.
Yeah, I also wonder, like, how the marketing might kind of, you know, rev things up to kind of connect itself to Endgame, right? Because we know they're only, you know, in terms of the marketing for Endgame, it's only going to be the first 15 to 20 minutes of the film, right? So who knows? There might be some elements in Captain Marvel that they might, through their marketing, reveal, you know, its connection to Endgame. So it might stir some of that. The other thing is, too, I mean, with people's expectations at this point being kind of so low, it could end up being just a, like a decent, fun film. You know, it might get, it could get good reviews and people are like, hell yeah, I'm going to go see it now because it could. Like it, all of that stuff goes, you know.
But I mean, at this point, we're like 2.5 weeks away. And
is it because don't forget,
February is a short month.
Oh my God, is it really 2.5 weeks?
It's 2 weeks from this coming Friday.
Oh my goodness.
And I said less than a month before, but we're 2.5 weeks.
Are we having a Revengers watch party?
So by the, well, that's a whole different conversation, but by the time we this episode drops, it'll basically be 2 weeks away. So, I mean, and I mean, when is this hype going to start? I mean, when is this connection? I think this is pretty much it is what it is. I don't see much changing. And I mean, yeah, as the, you know, the week before, you'll start to get things ramped up. But I mean, I'm just looking at, and I do know a few people who, you know, are fans of this genre. They're not super passionate like we are, but they're fans and they already got their Captain Marvel tickets. So, you know, they're people that are just like, well, it's a Marvel film. I'm going. So you're always going to have that, but it's just going to be interesting to see, like, if the hype isn't being generated with, like, the hardcores, who most likely will go see it anyway, just because that's what we do. But that means that you got to really worry about the mainstream audience, right? Because that's what happened, like, with Solo, right? And not to say that this is going to be a Solo type of thing, but, like, you know, that movie, you got the hardcores that went to see it. Or even, like, a Justice League, right? You got the hardcores that went to see it. But the mainstream just never connected, and that's what happened. So I'm wondering if this is heading down a, maybe not that exact path, but a similar type of path where, the hardcores are going to go out to see it, which means it'll pop a decent enough number opening weekend, but, like, what kind of legs is this thing going to have? Even with the reviews, because, I mean, there really haven't been very many Marvel films that haven't gotten at least, you know, good reviews. Even the ones that we, you know, even ones like Thor: The Dark World, which were like, ugh, that's not a very good movie. It still got decent reviews. So I don't know that the reviews necessarily even make that much of a difference for because, like we've talked about before, I mean, did the average moviegoer even pay attention to that stuff? Probably not. So I don't know. I'm wondering, and I don't want to say concerned because I'm not exactly losing sleep over it, but I'm just more fascinated to see is this movie headed down a path where like hardcore show up, but it just does not connect with the mainstream audience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I hope it's good. I hope we don't end up in a Solo situation. But here's the thing, it doesn't matter.
Well,
Captain Marvel, in the grand scheme of things, doesn't matter at all.
It does, though, in this sense, though.
Well,
I'll tell you why I think it matters. It matters because, like we talked about with, and I talked about it when we did the Revengers podcast, the roundtable wrap up thing, the year end thing. And I talked about why I thought Black Panther was so significant and the success of it was so significant. And one of those reasons was because as Marvel enters this next phase where they're going to start to, in theory, get rid of some of the old guard, they're going to need these characters. And I think, you know, they were banking on. Now, Black Panther became an even bigger success than I think they could have ever imagined. But they're relying on these characters, Captain Marvel, Black Panther, to be the anchors for this next phase of the thing. And if they start to have some failures with this, then all of a sudden it's like, And I know we're getting ahead of ourselves because the movie's not a failure yet, obviously. Right. We don't know. Right. But I'm just saying, in theory, if it is, I don't know that it's something that we just say, well, it doesn't really matter. They've made a fortune anyway.
Right.
Because I do think that they were relying on some of these characters.
So to that end, I mean, let's think about some of the, let's say, less successful MCU films. Would you, when you went to go to see Doctor Strange, were you excited about Doctor Strange?
Yeah, for a lot of reasons. One, I love Benedict Cumberbatch.
Okay.
And two, I always felt that that character would just make a great movie. Now, and I liked Doctor Strange.
Did you get that great movie?
I wouldn't say it's a great movie. I liked it a lot. I liked what he was in Infinity War much better than he was in his own movie. I thought he was much cooler in Infinity War than he was in his own movie. But I liked Doctor Strange. And I was excited for it because of the actor mainly, and the fact that I thought the character could be really cool. But there have been, like I said, even Ant-Man, I wasn't excited about Ant-Man, but I thought the couple trailers I saw were kind of cool. And I'm thinking to myself, you know what? This is an Ant-Man movie and I'm more interested in this than I probably should have been. Although, you know, you got to remember too, with Ant-Man, there was that disappointment of like, oh, this got taken away from Edgar Wright.
Right.
So there was a little bit of that, too. It was almost like, oh, man, you know, that would have been really cool. But so it was a little different, you know, but I just think I can't remember the last time I've been less excited for a Marvel solo like introduction film. This is definitely, I am not very excited about this. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting. And if I had seen conversation on Twitter that made me think, well, I'm an outlier on this, then I would say that. But I don't think I am.
Yeah, I don't think so either. I think people are kind of like, meh, whatever. But here's the thing. Even, like I said, I think you're right to a degree about, you know, where Marvel plans on sort of pushing its universe post Endgame, but with everything else that they seem to have in the hopper, and a couple of other different directions that they could go, I don't necessarily think whether or not she fails in the box office, I don't really think it'll be that big of a deal for what they want to do.
Yeah, right.
Because we also have to remember that, you know, there's the, in this movie, it's going to start setting up things that I would hope could transition into, you know, the reacquisition of their X-Men and Fantastic Four characters and stuff
like
that.
Post the
20th Century Fox thing, right? Yep. So it's like, okay, yeah, Captain Marvel failed, but we've got these other, you know, library of characters that we haven't had access to for freaking 20 years.
Yeah.
So more than that.
Let's I want to talk before we get out of here or get into our special guests. I do want to talk about a couple of streaming things. So I did mention Doom Patrol before, and I'm assuming you haven't seen it, the first episode.
No.
Watch it. We'll talk off the air about whether you liked it or not, but I really enjoyed it. It, like I said, it's quirky in all the right ways. I'm actually really looking forward to the next episode. It's fun. It's really a really good use of the streaming platform because it can take some chances that you clearly would not be taking on television. And it's got a really good cast. So I'm very excited for this show. The other thing was, I don't know if you've been following the news, but apparently there's Disney Plus is going to have Star Wars shows based on every character that's ever existed in the Star Wars universe.
Apparently. Rumored.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The rumor is the guy at the end of the bar in Mos Eisley is going to have a show.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
I mean, it was like one article after another. I was like, wait, is this a joke?
It's not. I don't think that stuff is true at all. It was funny because when the announcement, I don't want to say announcement, but when the rumors were circulating about Cassian Andor series, and I think wasn't there another untitled Diego Luna? Is it Diego Luna? No. What's the other guy's name? Pedro Pascal?
Yeah.
He's in The Mandalorian. I'm sorry. So all of that was like swirling around. And I remember folks saying, well, that's not necessarily. And actually, in a conversation that I had with Jason Ward of Making Star Wars on the Batman on Film podcast, he had mentioned that there were a couple of shows that he had heard that would be announced. And Cassian was one of those. So, I'll shake the trees and see what he thinks of all this stuff. But I don't, that's a lot. That's a lot of stuff they've got going on there. And again, I think the problem here that I'm seeing with some of the direction that they want to go with the Star Wars properties is like the revisiting of characters we've already met before. I want new. You know what I mean? Like, I don't want to, here's what Jyn Erso was doing before she got caught up in all this. Oh, here's what Kira was doing after she met Han. Like, I don't care. Like, whatever. You know what I mean? Like, I want new. I want new characters. I liked Kira in Solo. I think she served her purpose. The Red Dawn thing could be an interesting... Red Dawn, right? No. Red... What was the organization she was with?
Yeah, no, it's definitely not Red Dawn. Red Dawn's a movie with...
Red whatever.
Yeah.
Inferno. What? Red... Insert noun. I want to see something about that criminal element. I think that would be really cool. I don't need Kira. You know? Maybe Darth Maul occasionally, but I don't, Red Syndicate? Is that? I don't know. Anyways, kind of rambling here. But in general, I would just like to see new characters, new situations. I want to see them, like, push things forward or push things way back.
Yeah.
Circling this, like, 60-year time period over and over again. I'm like, come on. There's a lot more we can do here. So,
well, that kind of gets back to the whole, like, what we were talking about when we talked about the Star Wars stories, right? Like, the idea of, like, it didn't need to be origin stories or early, stage stories for all these famous characters. They could have been, these fun, quirky little, like, side stories based on things that we didn't know much about.
Right.
That's what I'd like to see these shows to be.
Like, I would love to see a story of, like, I don't know, like, this is going to sound, I'll say Rogue, but not referencing Rogue, Rogue One, like Rogue Jedis.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like, something like that.
Yeah.
People on the run.
Yeah.
That would be really cool. I'd love to see what happens when the first Force user, realizes they have power, or the split between the Jedi and the Sith.
Sure.
How did that happen?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
There's a lot. Cool. I mean, obviously, I don't have to tell you. I mean, there's so much to dig into that I don't think we need to just, it doesn't just need to be here's this character you saw in a movie one time, and here's their show.
Right, so, doesn't that feel like it's just like fan service?
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. And it's also playing on the whole, like, familiarity thing.
Right. It's like, those two guys in the bar, the guy that had his arm chopped off, well, here's how they became best friends. Really? I don't really care about that.
Right.
And you know,
yeah, I'll take your word for it. I don't need to see it.
But you know, the funny thing too is, and you know, everyone, I think one of the bigger bits of news in that plethora of like potential stories was the fact that they would do an Obi-Wan series or something like that, or movie or something like that for Disney Plus. I'm still dead set against.
Uh-oh. You want nothing. You Obi-Wan. Want no Obi-Wan anything ever.
I want Obi-Wan to pop up in episode 9.
Okay.
But that's it.
All right. Well, we're gonna have to get Rick Schubeck on to talk to you about
seriously
the fact that you want to erase Obi-Wan.
It's not about erasing him. It's a
just never want to see
dude.
Him.
Dude. No, he's in. I mean, the Clone Wars went on for 5 series. It's coming back.
Right.
Like, by and large, those are Obi-Wan Kenobi stories.
Yes. True. That's true. Yeah.
I don't, you know. All anyways. Right.
Anyway.
So, it's time, right? We got to bring on our guests.
Yeah. Before we keep going with this, we have some very special guests on the show this week. And Aaron, we'll let you take it.
We have one of our fellow Revenger cohorts, the co-host or what do you guys call yourselves, the Trinity of the Revengers podcast. We have Vanessa Bontea on.
Hey, guys. It's Banana.
What's up? We're stoked, man. It's been a long time. We've always – actually, Vanessa, honestly, we've been talking about trying to get you on here for the longest time because we're like, oh, man, like – Mario can wax poetic about whatever. Breton is like jokes and whatnot. He just goes on and on. And poor Vanessa gets like stuck in the corner somewhere sometimes. So we're like, we're going to give her a platform, let her do her thing.
On I'm our just show. The brains of the operation. I'm like in the corner, just like, you know, decoding the computer software on the website.
Awesome. But so one of the things that we really wanted to bring you on here was to talk about a short film that you had been working on called Catfight. And we're also excited to have Ariel Sinelikoff on the podcast as well to talk about the film. She's the writer, co-writer and the director of the film. So welcome, Ariel.
Hey, guys. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah. So, okay. We've got a whole bunch of questions that we have launched your way, and I think maybe we should just jump in. So, Chris, you want to start taking the first question?
Yeah, so, Vanessa, why don't you tell us a little bit about the premise of the film and of your character?
Okay, so I'll start with my character. Her name is Barb, Barb the Barbarian for long, and she is a deathmatch fighter in this post-apocalyptic kind of futuristic world, but really rooted in reality. It's year 2057, and America has kind of gone through this economic collapse because of everything that's going on, present day, as you can imagine. Mm-hmm. And global warming and climate change has also kind of wiped out certain communities in the world. Mm-hmm. So people are not doing well right now. And this kind of underground faction of cat fighting kind of springs up, and it's a way for women especially to kind of get like clothing, sustenance, a way to make money, you know, but they're strong fighting like go-getters. So I play Barb. I'm one of the girls' trainers. I'm a retired cat fighter. And now I just train all of these girls in my certain faction, which is Bill's Bombshells. Mm. And Bill kind of owns this company, I guess you can call it. And he's like the best in the United States. So whereas like when we have death matches, you know, you fight to the death. We might have one girl that dies every year. Other places, you know, might continually lose people. So I'm in like the best of the best ring right now. And my character has just, she's been there for over 10 years. She was a prize fighter once. And she's really built a trust and a relationship with Bill. And that's how she lives, you know, in this future world.
Very cool. Very cool. So Ariel, this feels like some uncharted territory in terms of like the film itself and sort of the different elements that it has. So you've got a little bit of, it feels like a little bit like Kickboxer, a little bit of Gladiator. You throw a little bit of that futuristic element in there. How did you come up with the idea for the film?
Yeah, so I actually didn't come up with the idea for the film. One of my best friends, Sarah Mahan, who's the creator and co-wrote the film, she came up with this back in like 2013, 2014. We both went to San Francisco State University for our undergrad. Mm-hmm. And we studied film, and that's how we met. I was finishing up my senior thesis, and she was about to do hers. And she originally wrote this as her senior thesis. And I loved it. It was great. And she realized, oh, this is pretty big. I don't know if I could really fund this as an undergraduate thesis. And so we talked about it, and I told her how much I loved it. And she said, would you someday want to make this into a short film? And I said, absolutely. Like, that would be my dream. So we kind of hung on to that dream. And I ended up here in New York. I go to Brooklyn College's Fierstein Graduate School of Cinema. And it's this really awesome program, and they give you a really nice grant of $10,000.
Wow.
And so I was like, here's our chance. We can make this film. So we both decided that it was going to be my graduate thesis in directing. But initially Sarah came up with the idea based on a song. Sarah loves punk and punk rock, and it's by this band called The Pretty Reckless called My Medicine. And so she had this amazing idea of what if there was a world where women are drugged up on these kind of like, it's like amphetamines meets like a bunch of other just like performance enhancing drugs, mm-hmm. dropped into this ring and have to fight other women to the death for the entertainment of men.
Wow.
So that's where the premise initially began. And we throughout the years just kind of built upon it. And so that's, you know, through that, Barb came about. The main character's name is Sadie the Savage, and you know, eventually down the line we realized, oh, this other character, Barb the Barbarian, she needs to be in it, and on top of that, she needs her and Sadie are in love, and they need to escape this world in order to survive and to maintain their love. And it just kind of grew from there.
Very cool. So when Sarah and you were kind of brainstorming around it, did it take any other iterations? How did the story evolve with the exception of sort of including Barb?
Yeah, it had many iterations. So initially it was just Sadie. In fact, her name wasn't even Sadie. It was originally Mad Maxine, because the original Mad Max trilogy heavily influenced the film. And then Mad Max Fury Road came out like a year or two later after Sarah wrote it. And we're like, well, we have to change her name now.
Mm-hmm.
So we named her Sadie the Savage. But yeah, originally it was just Sadie. And the initial story was really just about Sadie deciding, I'm no longer going to kill other girls in this ring. I'm basically going to stage a protest in the middle of a match. And so she tries to overcome this drug that she's on, which essentially induces a rage in these girls when they're out there fighting. But despite her, you know, as much as she tries, she ends up accidentally killing that girl. So that was the very first iteration of Catfight. A few years later, we brought Barb into it. And kind of as Sarah and I evolved as people, as the politics in this country changed, and as we kind of we're both really big feminists and intersectional feminists. And as our feminism grew and we learned more, the story really changed. And it became more so a story about how often women, whether they know it or not, are pit against one another. Mm-hmm. And there's nothing to gain in that. And so it became the story that became the antithesis to that, too. Showing how horrible that is and how in the end we really, despite all of our differences, need to come together and kind of join forces and work with one another.
Very cool. Mm-hmm. Very cool.
So I'm just listening here. Action, martial arts, punk rock. So this is checking off a lot of boxes for me.
Yeah.
It's pretty exciting. You mentioned Mad Max. What other movies inspired this work.
There's a whole hodgepodge of movies. The kind of main ones, I guess the most obvious ones, all the Mad Max movies. Zack Snyder's Sucker Punch was a big influence. Mm-hmm. Kind of my guilty pleasure. And then Escape from New York. Just kind of aesthetically was a big influence. We never see the outside world in the film, but it does take place in New York. And I always kind of imagined if we were to see that outside world, it would be very similar to Escape from New York. And then you have kind of like these weird in-between movies where I love exploitation films. And one of the films that inspired me was Russ Meyer's Faster Pussycat Kill Kill. So kind of looking into that. And then as I got into grad school, looking at, you know, some more artistic films in ways that you wouldn't really expect. So two of the biggest influences that were kind of surprising even for myself were last year's Lynn Ramsey film, You Were Never Really Here, and Steve McQueen's first feature film, Hunger, which is, it's a very artistic European film, but it's about a prison strike in the 1980s by the IRA. And so at first I was like, why do I keep flocking back to this? And then I realized, oh, because it's very similar to Catfight in many ways, just different characters in a different setting. Mm. So yeah, those were kind of the main influences, with just a bunch of others here and there.
Right. So when you set up this world, it seems that, obviously not having seen any of the footage of the film, that it's primarily focused on the female characters. Is it? Tell me a bit about where the men in the world live and sort of what was the approach that you took there. So you know, Vanessa, I know you mentioned that Barb has a relationship with Bill. Is that his name?
Yeah.
So how did you sort of develop that story to kind of set that stage between, you know, male and female?
Yeah, so actually men are very much in the background in this film. It is primarily focused on the women, and what we kind of wanted to do is show or have this sort of like background idea of the patriarchy is very much, you know, in control of this world. But what we're seeing more so is the effects of that, which is how the women treat each other. And we don't ever see a man until right before the first or the only fight in the film. We never actually see Bill's face in the film, which was a really kind of fun decision to play with. And then other than that, we see pretty much some bodyguards and the audience members, which is an all male audience. But the presence of men is still very much there throughout the film in how the women treat each other and interact with one another.
Very cool. So Vanessa, when you were looking into this role, what inspired you to sort of gravitate towards it? What was it about Barb that you sort of saw in yourself?
That's a good question. So I self-submitted on one of these acting websites. And I was so happy I came across it because I don't frequent the websites, you know, as much. It's not like a daily thing. And in the breakdown, you saw Sadie and Barb. But I gravitated towards Barb because I feel like I have this side of me that's really nurturing. And I also have this side of me that, you know... We can't curse, but, you know, if you mess with any of my family members, you know, or my friends or people that I'm loyal to, like, I will cut you. I will just black out and you are done. And maybe I'm projecting a lot of myself onto Barb, but I kind of feel like I've always said I would be a really good kind of like madam. You know, like if I lived in like a Western, I think I would, I'm just really good at taking care of people. And I feel like in this like messed up world, that's what Barb does. She takes care of the girls. And Sadie is this, you know, Sadie the Savage. She's this young, sprightly, like greyhound type, like quick moving fighter, you know, and she's got a lot of like energy and like she questions things. And maybe I was like that when I was, you know, in my early 20s or like when I was 21. But I've also evolved as a woman. And these like motherly, nurturing types of experiences are going through me right now. So naturally, I gravitated towards that. And also, I was really excited that the love relationship was between two women in the film. So that really intrigued me. And you have two female leads. And then the third aspect was that I get to use my martial arts and like my film, you know, fighting training. You know, I just want to like get down and like gritty and into it. So that's what attracted me to the role.
Very cool.
So I just want to, Ariel, you mentioned earlier, I want to circle back to it very quickly. You mentioned exploitation films, which yeah. is something that we don't really get to talk much about here on the show. But, you know, for a while there, that genre was having a little bit of a resurgence because of movies like Grindhouse and Machete that were, they were homages to exploitation films, but they were, ironically enough, they were critically acclaimed movies that were based on movies that were never critically acclaimed, you know, like, and but because they mimicked the style so well, like everybody looked at them as art, whereas the movies that they were, that inspired them were never looked at as art. Is there a lot of exploitation influence in this? Does it come through, or was it just something that was kind of like an influence and it's there, but it's kind of buried a little bit?
Yeah, it's a little more buried, I'd say. There was an iteration of Catfight where we considered, you know, shooting on 16 millimeter film and having it have this really exploitation look, which unfortunately we just didn't have the budget to do. It's cheaper to shoot on digital. But no, I think it influenced in the way of what we're kind of trying to do with Catfight is have the film be really reflexive on not just the subject matter, but the genre itself of action thriller, and really make the audience question kind of why we like gazing at, you know, women who are dressed up really sexy and kind of exploitive costumes and fighting each other. Not that that's always, you know, a bad thing, but just questioning why, you know, why this is something that is entertaining to us. And I think that's why exploitation films really fascinate me, is it's taking that idea, but it's also having fun with it in a really, like, in a way where you can kind of breathe. You know, like, whenever I watch Faster Pussycat, I just, like, I love it so much because it's just such a ridiculous, like, the acting is so over the top, the concept is so ridiculous, but you're like, you know what, like, this is fun. And I can have a good time with it, but it also, and this may just be the film student in me, it also kind of makes me think in this way of like, okay, like, why am I entertained by this? And I think that's really what we're trying to do with this film, specifically as an action thriller. So it has some roots in it, but they're a little more buried.
Mm. You know, when you were describing all that about, you know, sort of what's our fascination with sort of watching scantily clad women fight each other, I went right into like WWE, right, wrestling and all of that stuff. Would you say that world also sort of contributed or inspired you to kind of create this movie and the look and feel? Talk to us a little bit more about, you know, sort of how you crafted that world.
Yeah, a little bit. I don't watch WWE, but like one of the big influences from TV was season one of GLOW. I'm still not caught up on season two, but I definitely watched that to kind of look at the fighting style and to see how, you know, women are expected to fight in at least that world and how, you know, the heavily male audience reacts to that. So I would say that's kind of like the influence of that. I looked a little more at things like Sucker Punch, mainly because I know it a little too well, but just kind of focusing on some contemporary films that really aren't necessarily self-aware and thinking about, okay, if this were self-aware or, you know, we brought an awareness to this, what would that look like? And that's kind of the approach we took for Catfight.
Cool.
Very cool. So let's talk a little bit about, cause you just kind of touched on fighting style. Something near and dear to my heart. What is the what are the fights like in this? Like, what is the style? You mentioned that you used glow as a little bit of an inspiration, but what other things shaped the fighting style in this movie?
Yeah, so we had a really great stunt choreographer named Zelda Gay, who her and I had some really amazing talks, and we really wanted it to start off pretty dirty, like kind of dirty girl fighting. And it evolved more into really just like brutal, with a little bit of martial arts influence. Just, I'm here to kill. Because the whole thing is these girls are on drugs when they're fighting. So they're not entirely cognizant. They generally know where they are, but they're, you know, their vision's blurred. They're, all their senses are on high alert. So it starts off pretty dirty, and it goes more into, we're seeing less of the actual action itself and focusing more on the characters' connection with one another, towards the latter half of the fight. And also not so much focusing on the violence itself, kind of having the camera turn away from that violence, in a really purposeful manner.
Very cool.
So this isn't really and I don't know if you've seen these movies, but like the Undisputed series, where the movies are essentially like, there's a plot that exists because you need to get to the fight. And the fight is essentially like a big element of the movie, and some other things just kind of happen because they have to. But so this is more the fights are there, but it's the characters that are the key to this whole thing.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, we don't get to the fight until at least halfway, if not more, to the film. We're really focusing on Sadie and Barb's relationship and another character who I won't reveal yet, who comes in and ruins some things for them.
Mm.
Yeah, it's a, you know, like, to speak on Barb's style, she's Barb the Barbarian. So she's not a graceful, you know, I couldn't use any of you know, the martial arts really that I'm learning. She just goes in there and she'll pummel you.
Mm.
And like, while they're on these drugs, it's you're animalistic. So it's just zoning in on your prey, like you're the predator, and going for them. So that was really exciting for me because I'm used to working on choreography. Okay, this is like part one, this is part two, this is part three, and a lot of like hand-to-hand stuff, for example. There's just brutal, just like swings, and we have some weapons on us. You know, I have like a brass knuckle that says Barb. And when I come down on your face with that, you know, there, if you don't move, you're done.
Mm.
So that really intrigued me and excited me to work on, because I got to work on a different energy, a different strength, you know?
Right. How did you prepare for that? I mean, I know you talked about sort of tapping into some of the maternal, you know, instincts that you are developing or have. But in terms of that brutality and the sort of inner rage, how did you get into the headspace of Barb? What did you do to prepare for that?
I really just had to think to myself, you're an animal. Like, you need to tap into your primal, like, mama lion, mama bear, and whoever is in front of you, you just need to destroy and eliminate. Like, before we would start a take, for example, I wouldn't like actually talk to myself, but like somewhere deep down inside, I knew like I had to go to that animalistic place, you know, and naturally I would start like snarling and like breathing heavy and like growling. And well, we also had these super fun eye drops that like dissolved in your eye. But when they first go in, they make your pupils or your whole eye red, like bloodshot. And
wait, and you said these are super cool eye drops? I don't know.
They looked cool, but feel cool. Like, take after take. It's basically made of like a sugar substance.
Okay.
So you blink it out, and it's not harmful to your eye.
Gotcha.
But imagine someone dropping maple syrup into your eye. That was the consistency, and then it would just, you know, coat your whole eye red. And at first it was just like, oh my God, this is so uncomfortable. Okay, like get into character. But you know what? Afterwards, I actually really enjoyed having these drops in my eye, and I even asked for it before one take one time when I didn't know if the camera was on me or not, because it blurred my vision and it took me inward to this place, which is where I had to go for these, like, for this, you know, fight.
That's very cool.
And then of course during the more like love scenes, like in our cell, when I'm actually like not on drugs and talking to my love, you know, I just, you know, thought about my boyfriend, or not even, you know, just you tap into a universal understanding of whatever you understand love to be.
Right.
And, my co-star, Carolina.
Like, what, Brett?
Brett. Oh, I have to show you guys a funny scene I did with him. But Carolina, she's so beautiful. You know, she was easy to look at. She was like easy to talk to, and she's so charming. So, you know, we really connected and built a friendship out of this too. So it was really nice.
Very cool.
I just say, like, it was a director's dream just working with Vanessa and Carolina and our other actor, Chrissy Rose, because like all of them, first off, just incredible actors and so professional, really get into, like, one of my favorite things on set was having the few moments I had to just kind of like chill, just watching you guys get into character right before it takes was just so fun to watch, because they were just so into it. But the connection, I was telling Vanessa before we jumped on here, that it made me so happy after our first rehearsal, because, you know, they had all just met for the first time. And I overheard, I think it was Vanessa asking Carolina, hey, like, do you want to like hang out and like maybe go and like work out and prepare for this role? And I'm like, oh my God, they're bonding. They're already bonding. This is so great. So that was wonderful. But also just, they were such troopers. I mean, those were not easy days, especially our last one, which was the main fight scene. You know, we were in a drain. The fight takes place in a drained pool, kind of like in a makeshift gladiator type ring. And, you know, they're in these really uncomfortable costumes with this clunky armor. And on top of that, these blood drops in their eyes, take after take after take. And in a location that we weren't able to get into until the day of shooting. And every single time I would go over, I'm like, do you guys need a break? Or, you know, do you need something? They're like, nope, we're good. Let's just go. Like, we're going to do it. And I just want to, you know, commend them for that.
Very cool. So, Vanessa, I know only because of Instagram that you'd posted something about how you connected with your co-star. You want to share a little bit about how that process happened, like outside of working out and stuff like that?
What do you mean?
Did you guys, like, was there some Whitney Houston connection?
No, that was another co-star on a commercial.
Okay, sorry, Chris.
That was cut. Yeah, that was the Lion's Den commercial where I had a bathtub.
Well, wow. Okay, well, that's interesting.
But you know what? I have a different story, or kind of like insight on my first impressions when I met Carolina.
Yeah, let's hear it.
So, you know, I'm going into rehearsal. I see the email from like Ariel, and I see her last name, and her name is Carolina Doe. Just D-O is her last name. So I couldn't figure out her ethnicity. And I'm like, where is she from? Like, what is she about? You know, because this is the woman. This is going to be like my love for, you know, at least 6 days of shooting and throughout the rehearsal process. And I was like, I hope to God I like her. I hope she's cool, you know. And when she walked in, I was so blown back, because she's of Asian descent. She's Vietnamese.
Mm-hmm.
And for some reason, somewhere in my conditioned mind, I thought there was only room for one Asian American per film.
So you had like territorial?
No, it wasn't even territorial, because it was just like, it was just one of those like things that I just realized in that moment. I was like, oh, that's not a rule. Like, that's not something that actually exists. Like, there isn't just one Asian American per movie, but that's how it feels in the industry.
Gotcha.
That's totally how it feels. And you see casting, and of course, all of that is changing now. So I'm still tapped into this old world of lack, you know, and things that put you down, and, you know, as an actor. Sometimes we self-sabotage and tell ourselves things, but
yeah, that's interesting. So you went into this thinking like there was a box to fill, and yes, you were the only one that could fill that box. Yeah. And
right. I filled it cause I'm half Asian. So my co-star, she must be something else.
Right.
You know, it must be some sort of interracial relationship, but me being the exotic Asian one, which is what I typically would play or go out for. Right. You know, the Asian girlfriend to the Jewish guy, you know, that's usually like a trope, you know. And I was just so, like, so happy that she was like, and right away I'm like, hi, are you mixed? Like, what are you? Like, what kind of Asian are you? Like, I jumped on her right away. She probably was like, oh my God, who is this crazy that's girl?
Fascinating.
And she's like, I'm actually 100% Vietnamese. And I was like, oh my God, that's amazing. And then I just like, yeah, it was a really great rehearsal.
Very cool. Very cool.
So it's the last thing I'll say is it's rare to see two people of color, especially Asian American, let alone female, showcase a love relationship on screen. So that's my number one reason I'm so excited for this film. And it looks great.
That's great.
So one thing I wanted to talk about was because when you were describing the fight, it sounded fascinating to me because, I mean, Vanessa, you and I kind of briefly spoke about martial arts. You know, you were talking about martial arts choreography, but it sounds like, at least based on the way you described it, that the fight in this movie, at least by the standards of, like, a movie, it sounds like it's more realistic relative to the situation as opposed to something that's just, like, perfectly choreographed. The brutality and everything, and the fact that, you know, everyone's on drugs, like it sounds like it would be much more realistic based on the environment and the situation. I mean, can you compare it to some of the other things you've done that were like heavily choreographed?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it was still choreographed because we had to be safe. So Zelda broke it up into parts for us, you know, like this is still part one. This is part two when I like knock her to the ground. Safety was, of course, always the number one concern. So it was still choreographed, but in one sense, it was a little bit harder because you have to get into this character of like rage and drugs and stuff. So you have to act that and kind of generate that from, you know, from yourself, and then go through the choreography. And then do it right and do it in a safe way. And you have these drops in your eyes that also blur your vision. So that was one of our concerns, was how can we still be safe? But on screen, you know, if you're throwing a punch, you're like 6 inches away from someone's face. It's all camera angles. So you're never really close. As long as you know your angles, you're fine. So that's kind of how the choreography went. There was, you know, there was, of course, falls. There was punches to the face. There were grabs. There were tackles. There was, what else was there? Just a lot of grabbing and, like, grappling and, you know, falling. And there was one part where we had to run, but we have shock collars on us. And Bill, you know, shocks us. And then we have to convulse and, you know, fall to the floor. So there was just all of those little elements. And we practiced all of them. Oh, and then there's like throws, like I throw her into, you know, a speaker, because there's speakers there naturally. It's like a ring, you know, there's an announcer. So there was all of these elements to that. And that kind of has been a little different to a lot of stuff that I've done. I've done a lot of things with like weapons, you know, even like swords or like double katanas, or like sticks. You at least have distance with your weapon,
right? So mm-hmm. for those things, it's different. We choreograph and we practice those differently. Other stuff, you know, I've used like firearms and some other like more martial arty type of fights. It's hand-to-hand combat. So I haven't really done anything where I'm getting like really gritty and nitty, except for this other wrestling short that I did, which I feel like I can compare it most to that because you're making so much body contact with someone.
Mm. Cool. So there was something you hit on when you were talking about the casting of the film, and I'll throw it out to both of you guys. How does, you know, when you guys were making this film, how would you compare Catfight to, you know, do you think, or let me rephrase this question. Do you think that Catfight would have existed 10, 12 years ago? Do you think things have evolved so much so that these kinds of films are exactly what audiences are looking for and what creators are you know, looking to present to audiences?
I think in Hollywood, absolutely not. At least not the way that it currently is with the messages that it's conveying. I think today it's, you know, we're getting into a territory where it's a lot more friendly towards, you know, people who aren't straight white men, you know, and I think that's wonderful. And in fact, you know, I can't really speak a ton about it, but Catfight, the short film, is just an iteration of what we're hoping to make into something larger. So hopefully it will exist in a larger scale. But yeah, I don't think that it would have really had a good environment to thrive in 10 years ago, just because of the way that not just Hollywood, but really our world and politics and everything was going. I think with how the world is today, there's this, you know, necessity and there's this drive for people to kind of speak up and really say, no, we're not going to settle for this. We're not going to take this. We're going to talk about our truths, and it doesn't matter if you like it or not. So, and that's something I really have to commend Sarah, the creator and the co-writer, about, because she went into this really just completely fearless and allowed me to contribute to that in the writing.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, I think, you know, it's interesting. I think it's, you know, really bold to kind of chase the things that, you know, may not be so comfortable for folks to kind of take on. And it's great to see it kind of come from like the indie, you know, sort of short film environment, and that you guys are able to share that, you know, with folks. We didn't talk at all about like the length of the film or sort of when it's going to be released. You want to fill us in on that as I drop my phone?
So it's going to be finished in May. This is my graduate thesis film, so I need to finish it by then to graduate. And we're going to be, it's not the official premiere, but we're going to be screening it first at the DGA in Manhattan, which is really exciting. But after that, pretty much we're going to be putting it on the festival circuit, the 2020 festival circuit. And from there, who knows? So the goal is to hopefully have it available at some point after the festival circuit for everyone to watch. But, you know, friends and family will get private links, Indiegogo contributors will.
Netflix, it's coming in Netflix. Okay. We'll make it happen.
One thing I wanted to ask, one last question is, you know, for folks that are going to go see this movie, what's the key takeaway? What's the one thing you want people to come away from or come away with seeing the film?
Yeah, I really want, you know, regardless of gender, race, sexuality, whatever, I really want people to come away with the idea of, all differences aside, we need to find the similarities between one another and come together based on that. To, you know, fight against the things that are really just bringing not just country, but this world down. I really ideally would love this to empower women. You know, we very much wrote this with the idea of, or the philosophy of, intersectional feminism, meaning we include all women, you know, not just, you know, white, straight, cisgender women, every woman. And we need to be hearing all their voices and bring everyone to the table and listen mm-hmm. to everyone's needs. So that is specifically kind of who, you know, we're catering to for this. Mm-hmm. But ideally, everyone will be able to take away this idea of coming together.
Okay. That's awesome. And what about you, Vanessa?
Everything Ariel said, she puts it so eloquently, but I guess I can add one thing from maybe an actor's perspective. I think when I watched Crazy Rich Asians this year, you know, it wasn't like the deepest movie, you know, but to me, seeing a big cast of Asian Americans on screen in that format, in that way, really gave me a lot of confidence. And mm-hmm. and I attribute all my recent bookings, actually, this film, a couple commercials that I just shot, really to that sense of confidence that I belong here. There mm-hmm. is room for me. Because when you don't feel like you belong, you will make sure that you don't belong. You know, you will talk your way out of joining a group or auditioning or putting yourself out there because you're self-conscious. So I would love for people to take away from watching this film the fact that there can be a love story between someone like Barb and Sadie, played by, you know, Vanessa Bontea and Carolina Doe, and see some of their likeness in us to inspire other people to go forward their dreams, you know, and to just show that possibility out there and to show them that we are castable. You know, we can do this. Like, I don't always have to go in for the tech role, you know, in some like government agency, and then I have to bring like my fake glasses. Like, I'm so much more than that, and I'm different than that. So I'll add that to that.
Well, that's definitely awesome. So Vanessa and Ariel, thank you for joining us on the show this week. Where can people go to follow up and follow along on the progress of Catfight?
Yeah, so you can go to our website, www.catfightshortfilm.com. You can follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter.
And Ariel, where can folks find you?
You can find me on Instagram under Ariel2272. And my website is arielsinelnikoff.com, sinelnikoff.com. It's a long one.
Awesome. And Vanessa, where can they find you?
All right. You guys can find me on Twitter at Vanessa Bontea. I always forget my Twitter name, guys. We just recorded like episode 43 of The Revengers, and I always mess this up. I'm also on Instagram. My Instagram is Vanessa_Bontea. That's the difference. My Instagram has an underscore. So tweet me as you guys have been.
And awesome. Of course you can listen
thank
to
you guys. Thank you guys so much.
Thank you. And you can listen to Vanessa, of course, every week on the Revengers podcast here on the Revenge of the Fans podcast network.
Yeah.
100. All right, guys. Well, thanks so much again for joining the Fanboy Garage. We really can't wait to see the short film, and you know, we really, again, in so much gratitude for you guys for sharing your story and just the creation of the film and your experience with it. So much appreciated. Thank you
so much. It's been an honor being on here. Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
All right, thanks guys.
All right, man, so let's do some plugs and get out of here.
Go ahead, man. Take it away.
So the fanboygarage.com. Go there to listen to the current episode. Check out the episode archive. Buy some of our merch. Shop our Amazon Associates link. And also send us an email if you're not on Twitter or Instagram. You can send us an email directly to the show through that website. And of course, we always want you to join in on the conversation. We've had some really great conversations lately, especially around pro wrestling, which we've introduced to the fold based on last week's episode. And we've had some great conversations going on there about that. So let's keep that going. You can tweet us at the Fanboy Garage. You could find me on Twitter at RealCLMighty.
And you can find me on Twitter at Starting Sith. Don't forget to also follow our Instagram page, which is now alive and active. It's like, I don't know, it's like some sort of amoeba thing. It's just kind of growing. More followers, more stuff is going up there. We're connecting with more and more folks. So if you also have questions that you want to throw at us through Instagram, please do so. If you have any comments, please send them our way. But most importantly, where we could really use your help is leaving us a 5-star review. And for those of you that didn't, it's okay. It's cool. We still love you. Thanks for listening. And we just hope to get better every day. So thank you guys for listening as always. And I think that's it.
That's it. Let's get out of here.
Later. Close the door.